KSWV AM 810, Kiss Suave, Santa Fe, New Mexico.
It's 2 minutes after the hour at 9 o'clock. I'm Javier Gonzalez on this very special Saturday morning. Hope all of you are enjoying the wonderful snow that we've received here overnight. Also, let you know roads are a bit snow-packed, so if you're getting ready to go out and finish doing that last-minute Christmas shopping, make sure you drive with caution, and then, of course, you bundle up. We're very pleased this morning to have a very special guest with us here at Kiss Suave Radio on this Saturday morning, Deborah Dozier Potter, well-known here in Santa Fe for being an individual who has been active in helping community organizations meet some of their own needs and also being involved in the political party here, the Democratic Party, is with us this morning. She is the author of a book titled Let Buster Lead. The book is certainly about discovering love. It's about post-traumatic stress disorder, and it is about self-acceptance. With us this morning, Deborah Potter. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, Javier. How are you?
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's pretty special waking up in Santa Fe and seeing the amazing snow as it's kind of graced our city overnight.
Yes.
It's a reminder of how incredibly beautiful this town can be.
Isn't it wonderful? I mean, and people who should be out playing in the snow. And I feel for people who can't be happy, you know,
right,
get shut in on a day like this, because I had that experience myself.
And, right.
And but it's a wonderful day for going out shopping, buying books, buying those last minute presents, and enjoying the things we have and taking care of the people who we love. And for some people, Christmas is a really sad occasion.
Right.
For some people, it's really hard, especially
sure,
people who've lost a loved one during the year. That's mm-hmm, a really traumatic thing.
Well, we're going to talk about that mm-hmm, during this hour, and certainly it is an issue that, unfortunately, for many people in the past has been difficult to talk about and to identify how to get through having challenges that post-traumatic stress disorder can bring to an individual. So we're looking forward to hearing about the book, what led you to write the book, and some of your thoughts on how people can, and what you did, actually, to help you get through this. But let's start with letting the public know a little bit about you. Everyone knows that you have been so committed, you and your husband, Earl, to many of the community organizations here in Santa Fe. You've raised literally hundreds of thousands of dollars for Santa Fe's organizations. You've been involved in party politics. But tell us from your own words about yourself.
Well, I get real shy at times like this. I grew up in a A-list Hollywood family. I mean, my mother was a big movie star, and my aunt was a big movie star. People are going to want to know those names, so it's not a secret. Joan Fontaine is my mother. Olivia de Havilland is my aunt. My father, William Dozier, produced the Batman television
wow,
series, and he narrated it. Remember, Will Batman Escape?
That's
that
very
was
cool.
My dad. I loved
That's
him
great.
So much, and I still miss him. It's still hard to talk about him without tearing up a little bit. And then I moved here to marry somebody I had dated a little bit in high school, and when he was in college, to marry my dear best friend in the whole world, Earl Potter, who lots of people know out there.
Right.
People love and know Earl. And I came here to marry him, and it was quite an adjustment.
And when was that?
1979.
Okay.
It was quite an adjustment.
And did you come from California to Santa Fe?
I did.
Okay. So that was a big adjustment from a big, busy state to nice little quiet New Mexico.
It was.
Right.
And I was fortunate that one of my clients wanted me to keep representing him. I thought he was just being really sweet and naive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 1979, all we had was Federal Express. We didn't
right,
have MCI, and we
right,
didn't have faxes. They were unheard of. You
know? Right.
And so I was just doing a lot of traveling for my client, you know, going all over the country, going to Europe, especially going to Los Angeles several
mm-hmm,
times. And then my husband and I were very active in building his law firm
mm-hmm,
and also a lot of political things. Earl was most well known for doing approvals law. A lot of people hated him. A lot of people loved him. It just depended. And then my husband was Democratic Party chairman for the state,
mm-hmm,
as have many people been, but when Bill Clinton was being reelected, so it was the best time ever
mm-hmm,
to be a Democratic Party chairman. But
mm-hmm,
I think I met you, Javier.
That's right.
When he was bringing things before the county,
mm-hmm,
and you were a county commissioner,
mm-hmm,
and you were one of our best county county commissioners ever, and certainly one of the most approachable.
Thank you.
And so that's when I first met you. So Earl and I were used to being out among people in crowds. I was a big hugger, you know,
right.
Lots of people, oh, come up, let's hug,
right.
And, you know, all the time being around lots and lots of people going to the inaugurals in Washington where,
right.
I mean, it's just wall-to-wall people, you know, and I just had a way of sliding through them having, you know, grown up in New York City and Los Angeles, and I was just one of these great type A people,
mm-hmm.
people.
Right.
And when I fell off my horse and broke five bones, I stayed busy mm-hmm. as I could. But,
and when was that?
Well, it was in 1999.
Okay.
And I was riding my horse right out here at the horse park.
Mm-hmm.
My dogs were with me, all three of them. The fall was just really, frankly, all my fault. It wasn't my horse's fault at all. I'm going to mm-hmm. clarify my horse's reputation. It wasn't anything he did. And I, next thing I knew, I was, you know, unconscious on the ground. I mean, I didn't really know I was unconscious on the ground because I was
right.
unconscious on the ground. But what I was told later by one of my horse trainers is that Buster lay down on top of me. Gracie and Reggie, my other two dogs, lay on either side of me, and Buster wouldn't let the rescue workers near me.
Interesting.
And they had to send for somebody he knew, in this case, the guy who told me the story, to let him, Buster, know it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
This dog was the love of my life. He, honestly, we found him at the animal shelter in 1992.
Mm.
He was about a year and a half old.
Mm-hmm.
We had just lost a puppy. It was just really sad. A truck ran over a puppy mm-hmm. in our driveway. Mm-hmm. And the mother was all by herself. And
mm-hmm.
she was used to being with another dog. So we went to the animal shelter here in Santa Fe to get a dog for her.
Mm.
A companion for her.
Mm.
And I wasn't going to get attached to a dog again. I'm sorry. My heart was, you know, I had this crust formed around my heart because it was vulnerable. You know how we all get.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I went, no way I was going to get attached to this dog. It was her dog, my dog's dog, not mine. And over time, I just fell in love with this dog. I mean, he was just the most amazing dog. People who know me may well remember Buster.
Mm-hmm.
I used to take him with me everywhere all the time because he was border collies. We have so many border collies
mm-hmm.
here in northern New Mexico
mm-hmm.
because of all the sheep herding we have.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to have a job,
yep.
got to have a job, got to have a job, got to have a job. He would go anywhere with us we wanted him to go. If we would throw a stick in a pond for him, he would swim across the thing and bring it back to us. If we wanted to throw the frisbee for him, he would just delight in throwing the frisbee for
yeah.
him. I used to practice golf swinging, you know, with those little
right.
practice balls,
right.
and he'd go and fetch it and bring
yeah.
it back to me. Any work we had for him, he would do. And then when we were at the office all day, he would go around the neighborhood looking for work.
So this is a dog that came into your life in 1992.
Yes.
And through a period of time, you obviously developed an incredible bond with this dog. And, you know, one of the things, Deborah, that I've certainly appreciated from my own wife is that, there can be very special relationships between humans and their pets. And unfortunately, sometimes, you know, we have an environment. Thankfully, there are things like dog rescues, organizations and pet shelters and things of that nature. But, you know, we have an environment sometimes where people do not care for their animals appropriately, and they don't make that effort in developing relationships. And it's rather unfortunate because as you and all of us who have had relationships with their animals, it is pretty special. It is a nice feeling to have when you know that you've got someone out there looking out for you or wants to just be a part of who you are.
And wants to love you for who
right.
you are.
Okay.
It's that unconditional love that our pets can give us that just maybe for some of us, certainly with me, can remind us that we are indeed lovable.
Right.
I mean, those of us who most, I mean, I'm sure most of us, we have lots of moments, maybe too many in some cases like mine.
Right.
You don't feel lovable. You don't feel like you matter. You don't feel like you're worth something.
Right.
And it's that, you know, just look in the face of your pet, your cat, your dog, and they love you. Right. And then maybe we can start saying, well, maybe I'm lovable. Maybe right. I am lovable. Maybe I'm okay.
Sure. We're visiting with Deborah Dozier Potter. She just recently wrote a book, Let Buster Lead. It is a book, a large part, about your experiences dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. Where can the book be found here locally?
Well, I checked around. I called different bookstores, and first of all, I love to send people to Garcia Street Books because they did a book signing for me, and it's such a wonderful place. You know where Tito's Grocery
That's
used
right.
to be.
Right.
That's now Garcia Street Books. So lots everybody remembers Tito's Grocery. Mm-hmm. So that's they have several there, and they're going to be having it for a long time. Collected Works has a few books left. And, of course, the Five and Dime on the Plaza has some books left. And Borders at Sambusco only has three left, so people better hurry if they're going to shop there today.
And it certainly can be a wonderful present to give to individuals who, you know, are struggling. And even those who aren't struggling who want to understand what their friends or their family members are going through.
Well, and you know, we all suffer from traumas. One thing my experience has taught me, we all experience traumas. And we all can have a disability,
right.
But we can't get through it alone. People don't think, well, what's a trauma? You know, well, in my case, I fell off my horse.
Right.
For some people, it's the death of a loved one. That's a big one way up there.
Right.
Accidents at work, accidents in the car, responders who respond to people who in these traumas who look at it, that is traumatic for them. Mm. It is traumatic to witness abuse in your family, any kind of physical abuse in the family. Rape is a major trauma. For children, changing schools is a trauma. And not everybody, I've been reading a lot about PTSD after I wrote my book because I didn't want what I read to affect what I wrote.
Right.
I mean, my story tells people what PTSD feels like.
Well, let's talk about that real quick before it goes on. Okay. Tell us what post-traumatic stress disorder is.
Post-traumatic stress disorder is, I'm not a medical expert, so I will just tell you in my own words here.
Please.
It is a condition that not everyone gets after a trauma. Probably 20% of people suffering a trauma will get PTSD. It's not something only veterans have. What about the rest of us? You know, we've all suffered traumas in our life, mm-hmm. and maybe we've recovered, but are we sure?
Mm-hmm.
The symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder are what I had, and I describe in my book. First of all, hypervigilance, that just constantly being jumpy and aware. It's not something that we decide to do. Mm. It's a chemical reaction in the body. To the body, not the mind, but to the body, the event is still taking place over and over again. And in my case, I was hypervigilant. I was hyper aware. Mm-hmm. I was aware of people near me all the time. I was aware of really loud noises. Mm-hmm. When I was aware of when my husband would walk into the room, I'd scream. Mm-hmm. When I'd be driving down the street and a car would come from the other direction, I'd get so startled. Mm-hmm. We know lots of people like this, you and I and everybody mm-hmm. out there. How many times have we said about a friend, you know, ever since blank happened mm-hmm. to him or her, he or she has not been the same since. She's a different person since this happened. Mm-hmm. He's a different person since he got fired from his job. Mm-hmm. That's a trauma, too. Mm-hmm. So this is what different felt like to me. I relived the experience over and over again. In my case, you know, I'm so arrogant sometimes. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a nightmare. It was like, gee, if only I'd done this and only if I've done that. And how exactly did I fall? And what did I do before that? But I still relived it over and over and over again. And this is well into a year after the accident. It's normal for people and expected, and we hope so, that after a trauma, people experience these things for about a month or so. Mm-hmm. But when they last past a month, that's when I hope people will look for those symptoms of PTSD mm-hmm. because it's very easy to treat.
What other symptoms?
The symptoms, and I list them in my book, but first of all, nightmares.
Nightmares.
A lot of nightmares. And flashbacks. That's not like you see visions or anything. It's that you relive it and you remember it over and over again. Why did my mommy spank me? What did I do wrong? When, you know, when my mommy spanked me, I did this and I should have said this. And gosh, you know, and she spanked me this way. Mm. When my husband hit me, what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. What did I say? How did it happen? Well, I should have ducked. I should have done this. But you're still reliving it. When I got fired from my job, I should have said this, and I should have asked for this, and maybe I shouldn't have done this, but that guy said this to me, and I should have, and you know, that.
So you can't get beyond it.
Reliving it. Mm-hmm. You got it. Now, this is in your mind. This is what it feels like on the inside. Mm-hmm. Now, the memories of those events, we've talked about emotional numbness, just completely shutting down emotionally and not letting anybody in there. And that's what can lead to really serious things, because a lot of people mask that numbness with alcohol, with daredevil activity, oddly enough, with drugs. Now, trouble feeling affectionate is another one. Mm-hmm. You know, she's jumpy. Well, all of a sudden, when I try to touch her, she jumps. Mm-hmm. You know, she flinches when I touch her. For me, what that felt like, I mean, somebody would come towards me, and I still flinch when somebody touches me unexpectedly now. But then, when somebody would touch me, I adrenaline would rush through my body for about 2 hours. It was just an awful thing to be touched. And being easily startled. Irritability is another one. Man, PMS is nothing compared to the irritability, you know, that I felt during this situation. Aggression. I've spoken with some Vietnam veterans who've come to some of my book signings, and they're afraid of what they might do. Mm-hmm. They have PTSD to the point where they are really afraid of what they might do if they go out among people. Sleeplessness. Sudden gaining or losing of weight, depression, and these are just some of the symptoms. There's links on my website, Let Buster Lead, to other symptoms, to how people can get treatment. How this affected me?
Well, let's go back. I want to go back to, because we moved off a little bit, because I think it's important that people understand. One of the things that you said earlier is that PTSD could come in many forms as a result of many occurrences that can happen in one's life. And certainly we're most familiar with it because our veterans have to deal with it almost constantly, especially when they come back from war. But as you indicated, PTSD can come as a result of many different occurrences. I mean, and, you know, we have a lot of people in this community or throughout the state that are victims of abuse. We have people who have had to see loved ones pass away in a very terrible way. So there are lots of things. For you in particular, in 1999, you were riding your horse out at the horse park, and you were with your three dogs. This is just a recap. And of course, just to let our listeners know, if you're just joining us, we're with Deborah Dodger Potter, who is the author of the book Let Buster Lead. You can actually go to her website, letbusterlead.com. Is that right? Mm-hmm. It's a book about post-traumatic stress disorder, and on this particular day in 1999, you had a hard fall. You became unconscious, and where we left the story, your dog, Buster, was laying over you and protecting you, obviously as a result of a bond that had been developed over 7 years from the time that you rescued him from the animal shelter, and there you guys were. So tell us what happened after.
Well, I was taken to the hospital. Somebody who worked for the horse park, who my dogs knew, got them to come in her car. And then the memory of this is in and out for me because I had a concussion. I was semi-conscious. But I was taken by the wonderful EMTs we have here in Santa Fe, fantastic fire and rescue people we have here. And they see trauma every day, and it's got to affect them.
Sure.
And I was taken to St. Vincent's. I was in the emergency room for 11 hours. I stayed in the hospital for a week. And what's amazing, Javier, is every single medical person who came to introduce themselves to me, like, hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so, or I'm your nurse so-and-so, the next sentence they said, even the discharge nurse, was, you've suffered major trauma. There was no therefore. There was no, we suggest you look into the symptoms of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. There was no, you might have trouble later on. It was just, you've had major trauma. and I was
and
in
what
the
did you interpret that to be when they told you? Was it just a big impact on your body? When you, I mean, how did you, when someone said that to you, what were your thoughts?
Other than, duh.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, I'm feeling pretty bad.
Right, yeah.
Pretty traumatic.
I broke five bones. I had a concussion. That's what I thought they were talking about. And so I was in a hospital, in the hospital, in that sort of level right below intensive care for a week. I had to learn how to get up and walk again. I had to learn how to get up and do functions that we're all thinking about right now. And then when they sent me home, again, the discharge nurse, starting out with, you've had major trauma. And they suggested that I go to different doctors for the bones, the neurologist for the, I cracked a bone in my neck. They suggested I go to my neurologist for that. They suggested I go, neurosurgeon, excuse me. They suggested I go to orthopedic doctors for the other broken bones. There was no suggestion of counseling for whatever emotional effects I might have from this.
Do you feel that that was just an issue of the lack of awareness by the medical community as to options available to people who experience trauma?
Absolutely.
Does it still exist today?
I think it does. I have some really close friends who on the East Coast who endured the death of one of their children. And talk about trauma. I mean, horrible thing to go through. And they were getting a very costly divorce. One of them had PTSD. Neither one of them knew it. They didn't recognize it. They didn't know to look for it. What's really scary is both of these people are doctors.
Oh, boy.
And now there's much more awareness of post-traumatic stress disorder. And that's really why I'd like people to read Let Buster Lead or tell their friends about Let Buster Lead. Because within this wonderful love story about a dog who became my service dog, there it talks about this disease. It doesn't preach and tell people, hey, it's not an academic textbook, but it's there.
So they release you. They tell you the obvious. You have experienced major trauma. You go through the recovery period. This is probably sometime during 1999. Then what happens?
Well, I was in a hospital bed in my kitchen for a month.
Wow.
And I
hope Earl knew how to cook.
Well, I'm getting to that. I had a Hemi walker, a little walker, and I had a brace on my neck. I had an arm in a sling, and somehow I managed to lower and raise the bed and get out and make myself a lean cuisine for lunch and get back in.
Right.
And darling Buster would jump up on the bed and cuddle me and not ever touch one single broken bone. My darling Earl would come home and give me a hug and manage to touch all of them. You know, just poor guy, you know. And then when I traveled to Long Island to look at a house we were renting, I built a house there, second home that we were building, and I still had all these accoutrements. The first time, actually, I got up because I wanted to go see my horse. It was the first Saturday I was really able to get up. And I wanted to stop at Target on the way. I don't know what I needed, some silly thing. And we walk in Target, and there I am with this neck brace and the sling and this walker, little walker on the side, and I start slogging through there. I sort of walked like a rusty robot. You know? And little kids looked at me and screamed. You know? And so all I could do was laugh. You know?
Right.
But in this condition, I traveled to Long Island, you know, through airports and all of that, and I was so tired. I could barely move, and I just went to some necessary meetings I had to have, and then came back. And that was difficult because people tried to help me in all the wrong way. I mean, by actually lifting my pelvis for me and moving me over, and it was just so painful and horrible.
I can imagine.
We need to really realize that when people do have a physical disability, ask them if they want to be helped. Don't just do it for them.
Right.
Because we really never know what people's needs are. And then I just kept on going. I kept working on this house. I kept working on this pool. I just treated that we were building something in our backyard. I just treated this accident like I did with everything else. Like, mm-hmm. this is a major inconvenience, but I have to get past it. I have to go on. I'm busy. I have to do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And get back on the horse is a fantastic rule of life. I think it's one of the best. Mm-hmm. This was one of the few times that I wasn't physically able to get back on my horse. But in terms of getting back to what I was doing in life, that was my attitude. Get back on the horse. Go on with it. Did I think to get counseling or anything for... No, it just didn't enter my mind. I was just focused on what I had to get done. And yes, I was irritable, and yes, I was cranky, and I thought it was just because I had all this stress in my life.
Like building a house and traveling and distance away, right?
You know, and I was, you know, in pain physically, and I didn't want to take the painkillers because they made me depressed.
Had you already started experiencing the sleepless nights?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I would watch old movies over and over from my hospital bed in the kitchen. And absolutely. And the pain was pretty intense. But I would just count the days when different bones would heal. And I'd go to my doctor. I couldn't drive. My darling husband drove me to the doctor's appointments. And I just, first the rib healed. You know, I was just sort of counting what bones would heal. There's a funny story about the rib. It was lily season, and people would send me flowers. They sent me lilies. And, well, I'm allergic to
them. Oh, no.
So they'd make me sneeze. And then the rib would hurt. And then I'd laugh because it was so funny. And then that would hurt. You know? So, I mean, there was no real movement I could do without pain.
Right.
And within 6 weeks, most of the bones healed. My shattered collarbone. Will never heal. But the pain went away. For that one, that took about 6 months.
Wow.
And it was very hard to sleep because I was so used to curling up on my left side,
sure.
And I couldn't anymore.
Oh boy.
And I couldn't sleep on my right side because of my broken right pelvis. So I had to learn to sleep on my back, which was something I'd never been able to do. So that's what I attributed the sleeplessness to.
I see.
It never occurred to me that it was from an emotional reaction. I thought, well, of course I can't sleep.
Right.
And my poor husband had to put up with me all this time. I mean, I was just irritable and cranky, and I almost ruined my marriage. I honestly did. It wasn't because of anything my husband was doing. My husband has the patience of a saint.
And anyone knows Earl knows that to be very true.
Oh, yeah. But but anyone else, I mean, Consuelo would not have put up with you if you were this way.
Right.
I mean, she's a sane and rational person.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, and, you know, I mean, I was just a monster.
Right.
But of course, you know, I kept traveling and doing things I needed to do, which didn't, you know, looking back on it, common sense tells people not to do that.
But sure.
I don't have a whole lot of common sense, you know, I'm just a driven doer. So, after the bones, you know, healed and everything else, I was still frightened of being touched. I still didn't want anybody in the room with me. It didn't occur to me that day after day I talked myself out of going somewhere.
This was about 6 months after the accident.
6 months to a year.
To a year after the accident, right.
I went to necessary things like business meetings that I had for our businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I went to necessary meetings for the house in Long Island. I had to, you know, get on the plane and go. But did I go to any kind of social gathering or party or charity fundraiser or county commission meeting?
Mm-hmm.
No. Mm. Did I know why? No. Did I notice I wasn't going to these things? No. On any given night or day, I would talk myself out of going. I'd say, you know, honey, let's just stay in tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm really tired because I was.
Mm.
And, you know, why don't we just make dinner by the fire and... You know, this charity event we bought tickets to, well, you know, you can deduct the whole thing if you don't go.
Right.
So there's another reason. This went on for about a year, and I didn't realize it. And then I met a woman in Long Island who had a service dog with her. Part of the big frustration for me was not being able to take Buster with me when I went back there to work. Because by now, Buster... honestly, had become the love of my life.
Yeah.
Now, there's lots of people out there who think I'm crazy, And there's even more people out there who feel this way about their dog or cat. They are in love. It is a love relationship.
We've got to take a quick break just for a station ID. It's 31 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. You're listening to KSWV, Kesuave Radio. I'm Javier Gonzalez. This morning, a special edition here on Kesuave Radio with Deborah Dozier Potter. She is the author of Let Buster Lead. It's a book about discovering love, about post-traumatic stress disorder and self-acceptance. We've been, over the last half hour, talking about the fact that that post-traumatic stress disorder comes as a result of many events that occur in people's lives, and that there are many signs that people can see either in themselves or in other individuals. Deborah, you've been talking about the issues of depression is probably the most obvious, the inability to sleep during at nights, aggression, irritability. Was the word hypervigilant?
Yes, jumpiness.
Very jumpiness, and the need to continuously have the event played out over and over in your mind, not being able to move on. I mean, lots of different symptoms that are out there. The book Let Buster Lead is in the local bookstores here, Garcia Bookstore, Borders, any local place, of course. And we'll be talking about this, if there are individuals, as Deborah's indicated, who make a lot of excuses about why not to go out. The good thing is we are in the age of the internet. And Amazon.com also carries the book, and that certainly is a testament to the quality of this book, because Amazon doesn't carry any books. So if you don't feel like you want to go out there publicly, but yet you want to learn about post-traumatic stress disorder, you want to read Deborah's story and begin to understand how it can benefit your own life, go to Amazon.com and you can pick up the book there as well. So here we are, you're back in Long Island, and you meet an individual who has a service dog. Now, what's a service dog?
Well, I want to just quickly add that half the proceeds of this book are going to go to animal shelters and organizations that treat people who are victims of trauma.
That's terrific. Wonderful.
Well, I wrote this to help people. Great. Now, I was in Long Island, and I met this woman. I missed Buster so much. Great. Whenever I was without him, I just missed him. And the woman who took care of him while I was gone told me he was the same way. We were in love with each other. And I met a woman who wasn't blind. Now, a lot of people don't realize you don't have to be blind to have an assistance dog help you get through public places. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I had no idea. I met a woman who clearly wasn't blind, and she had her dog with her at a public meeting in a city hall. And I went up to her and I said, do you mind if I ask you about your dog? She says, yes. And I go, okay, sorry. I'm really sorry. And then I met her later. And we started talking, and she lent me her file. She said, you never know. I told her what I'd gone through. She says, you never know when you're going to need your dog to take care of you. Now, you asked about the term service dog. It's really a broader category called assistance dog. Here we have assistance dogs of the West that everybody knows about. It trains dogs. There are so many people who don't realize that they can have a dog to help them through whatever illness they're going through now.
Interesting.
Guide dogs that we know of for the blind, those are guide dogs. It's a type of assistance dog. It's also hearing dogs for people who are hearing impaired. They can alert them to cars coming, phone ringing, the doorbell. They're amazing. They're just amazing what these can do. And then there's the therapy dog, who for people with an emotional illness, that term mental illness, it makes us feel like we're all really crazy. It's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, for people who are depressed or have panic attacks or even diabetes, there's not that that's an emotional illness by any means, but these are reasons people have dogs. Sure. They make them feel better. Mm-hmm. They give them the courage to get through the day. Mm-hmm. And then there's service dogs who do specific tasks for people. Mm-hmm. I know a woman who's in a wheelchair, and her dog, Morgan, does specific things for her. Mm-hmm. In seeing films when I took Buster to a trainer. There are dogs that go through shopping aisles with their masters and pick out certain items from the shelf, who ring elevator buttons and who fetch them things they can't live without them. And this is such an important law for people not to take advantage of and not to abuse, because people's lives do depend on this law. And I started feeling guilty. I didn't want to abuse the law. I didn't want to take advantage of the law. I mean, Justin Dart, who's the Martin Luther King for the people with disabilities, who really got that law, the ADA law, through, was a very close friend of mine. And I, there's no way I'm going to jeopardize this law for people who really need it. But when my friend gave me her file, just in case, I was looking down to see, the little imp in me, you know, what diseases, you know, people have service dogs for. And, you know, there it was, subtle disabilities, diabetes, seizures, panic attacks, depression. These are things that people don't obviously see in somebody, and they do need a dog to help them through this. My friend's dog would bark when her chemistry in her body would alter in such a way that it was dangerous. The dog could tell. And post-traumatic stress disorder. And there were the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. I was reading them. My jaw dropped. I realized I have this disease. Oh, my God, this is me. I am going through this. I had no idea that I had a disease that had a name, that had a, I had a disease that was treatable. I still didn't consider it a disability. There's a fine line between an illness and a disability. Something becomes a disability when it prevents us from performing major life functions, like going to work, being able to function with our families and society. That's when it crosses the line, when we're just not able to do that. I didn't feel as though I had crossed that line when I found this out. So, of course, I didn't feel like I deserved Buster to be my service dog.
But the emotion that you must have gone through to recognize the fact that, you know, all this time, you certainly recognize that you weren't sleeping at night, that you were irritable, that you were angry, that you had emotional outbursts. But really, it had to be frustrating not really understanding why, or thinking maybe it was because you're building a new home or whatever it might be. But all of a sudden, you're reading this and you say, wow, you know, this really is something totally different that I really did not even imagine. And did you know when you read it, when you understood that you had post-traumatic stress disorder, did you know that it went back to the horse right away, or the horse accident, or did you think, wow, I just have it, and that's just kind of the way it is? I mean, how did you come to that realization?
I'm really glad you asked that question, because when I saw the symptoms of the way I was behaving, now, before that, like most people, I thought it was just my environment. You know, I thought I was, you know, I'd jump when my husband walked in the room because he was always touching one of my broken bones, damn it.
Right.
You know, excuse me,
public
out there. You know, I thought I was just irritable because I was, you know, I was in this, all these projects. It was my contractor's fault. He was behind schedule. We tend to blame the environment.
Right.
We tend to blame everybody else in our surroundings.
Right.
What was so reassuring for me when I discovered this list was I realized it was me.
Right.
And that I had something that was causing this.
Right.
And it wasn't just everybody around me. Now, there are, not everybody gets post-traumatic stress disorder. Probably about 20% of people who suffer a trauma get it. That's 5% of Americans.
Right.
13 million people are walking around today at any given time with diagnosed PTSD.
Right.
Those aren't the people like me who are ruining their lives because they don't know they have it.
Right.
There's a theory that people who have this proclivity, because I've spoken with Esther Giller, who's the head of an organization called CIDRN, there's a link to on letbusterlead.com, that is a resource for people who have PTSD. They help them find treatment. They help them find funding if they need it. She said that they're having such a big problem with the veterans today coming back from Iraq, more so than other wars, because kids who are volunteering for the services often come from broken and abusive homes to begin with.
That's a great point, because that was where I was going with. Is it important to understand the event that led to PTSD, or once you have it, you go through the the healing process, regardless of what that event was? I mean, how important is it knowing what caused it?
Well, and I was set up for it as a child. I mean, my parents were divorced. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of neglect because they were gone a lot. Mm-hmm. I broke a leg as a kid. My hair was set on fire as a kid. None of this was deliberate. I mean, but I mean, there are kids right here in Santa Fe who have suffered from these things and worse than me. I mean, I'm just, you know, I feel humbled to think how minor my situation was and how severe my disease became compared to what so many people go through. Mm-hmm. And of course they mask the symptoms. My goodness. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to mask it over and over again.
And much of it is cultural and, you know, especially in many families in northern New Mexico, Hispanic families. I mean, these are things that people don't necessarily like to deal with.
Absolutely.
They view it as being shameful. They view it as not wanting to cause problems or have other people talk about their family. So, you know, it's one of those heads in the sand kind of thing. If you don't address it, don't deal with it, it'll go away. And it doesn't. It gets worse.
That's true. My family, too.
Right.
I mean, you have to be Hispanic.
Right.
You know, it was like,
it's just a family issue.
Don't cry now. Come on. Now, I don't have time for this.
Right.
You know, I'm too busy. Don't be that way.
Right.
Grow up. You know, come on. Shape up. You know, you don't want to make us look bad. You know, don't tell anybody.
Right.
That's the biggest one.
Right. Don't
tell
anybody. Right.
And and so what does a kid do but just swallow it?
Sure.
What does an adult do later on? Drinks. Takes drugs, gets into dangerous situation, gets in fights. I heard a statistic from the woman who runs the Girard House here, which is a wonderful organization that takes care of children who've lost a parent, who's had a parent die. She said at her awards ceremony for the Pinon Awards, it's such a wonderful thing here. It's so great to be talking to my hometown audience for once because we have all these references together.
Right.
She said that 90% of people on death row had a parent die when they were children. So often when someone dies, it's the spouse that gets all the sympathy and not the kids. And yes, the spouse deserves sympathy. Mm-hmm. But the kids, the friends, they don't. And we don't take care of the emotional effect of things. I remember and I write about this situation in my book, when my stepfather accidentally set my hair on fire. It was a cooking accident. I mean, he was a wonderful person. And all I remember was this came out in therapy for PTSD, which we'll get to in a minute because it's so important. But, you know, all of a sudden my stepfather's lunging at me, rolling me on the floor. I didn't know my hair was on fire. And, of course, they did what every parent does. They deal with the injury. Oh, let's get her to the emergency room right away. Let's get some salve to put on the burns right away. Hurry up. Let's get in the car.
Right.
We don't take that moment to deal with, oh, honey, are you okay?
Sure.
Gee, gosh, you know, can I hug you? Do you need a hug? You're getting me we're here for you. We love you. We don't stop to do that as parents. I certainly don't.
Mm-hmm.
When you know, a kid is, you know, skins her knee. I mean, I had millions of skin knees as a little girl because my Catholic school was on that pavement, you know. And, you know, you treat the skin knee. You don't treat oh, gosh, are you okay? And you fell and that must have been really embarrassing. And, you know, your friends love you. It's just simple little things like this that can help with the emotional after effects of something.
Well, let's talk about how you began to heal and, you know, you've discovered the fact that you've got post-traumatic stress disorder, busters in your life. There are lots of things that are converging. It's about 15 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock. We're with Deborah Dozier Potter, who is the author of Let Buster Lead. You can get the book at any of the local bookstores here or Amazon.com, as well as go to her website, letbusterlead.com. We've got about 15 minutes left, and I think that, you know, it'd be really important so that we can understand how you begin to heal and what you did to begin to heal. Once you discovered, boy, I've got this disease.
And I am here to tell you and tell everybody else there is another side. I am here to tell you that this is a treatable disease because I am back in public again. I went to a big thing last night. I had fun. It took me years to just first start going, then getting through it, then tolerating it, then being amazed I actually stayed a little longer to where I actually start having fun again around people.
Mm-hmm.
And there is another side.
Right.
And I... I didn't realize that he'd crossed into disability until I was at a function here for the at the El Dorado, one of those great big dinners, you know. And I went and put my purse down at my table, and I turned around and I saw my darling Earl talking to a lawyer friend, Mel Yost, actually. I don't mention his name in the book, but and there they were talking, and all of a sudden Mel turned, with his arms out, wanting to give me a big hug, starts rushing towards me. I started screaming. I started getting paralyzed. My throat was stuck. I was like, and I backed into a ficus tree, nearly knocked the thing over. You know?
Right, right.
And, but I had adrenaline rushing through my body the whole time. This is a year and a half after the accident.
Wow.
This is what people need to realize. It takes that long sometimes. And people don't look for the symptoms of something a year later. Mm-hmm. All these Virginia Tech kids, oh, they're all back in the school.
Right.
You know. That's when I knew it was disability time. And I deserved to have Buster go with me. Mm-hmm. And I was able to take him on airplanes. I couldn't get through an airport without him. Just the chaos, the hustle bustle of an airport, people moving too quickly, all those noisy wheels on all those bricks down there in the Albuquerque airport, it terrified me. And, you know, I mean, this is someone who used to fly everywhere all the time.
Sure.
And I would keep Buster next to me, keep a wall on the other side of me. My psychotherapist was terrific in helping me get through the emotional part of it today. I went to a psychiatrist to see if I could have different medications. I already take medication for depression. Mm-hmm. That's nothing to be ashamed of.
Of course not. Absolutely
and
not.
And everybody, it's just a chemical imbalance mm-hmm. that people
Absolutely.
Need to realize
right.
it's okay.
That's right.
And we tried a different antidepressant. It didn't really help much. I mean, I was at the point where I honestly wanted to live by myself. I mm-hmm. didn't want to live with somebody else. We can imagine how hard that must have been on my husband.
Oh, absolutely. Very scary for him.
Oh,
I mean, really not understanding. You weren't understanding what was going on. And I can't imagine, you know, for someone who loves you very much, who is so close in proximity with you, what they had to go through to say, my gosh, you know, the feeling of not being able to help or being able to keep you protected and safe, which is what, you know, every loved one wants to do for their loved ones, had to be very difficult for him.
Absolutely. And the tendency is to want to embrace and protect.
Right.
And that was the last thing I wanted.
Right.
And, it was very, very hard on him. Mm-hmm. And but so many people are doing this. They're,
sure.
they're ruining their lives. They're ruining their families. They're ruining their mm-hmm. careers because they have something highly treatable that they don't know. Mm-hmm. Then somebody told me about EMDR, which is frankly the most recommended treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, people who may think they have it just from listening to us or mm-hmm. looking at the symptoms in my book, I recommend that you read my story, first mm-hmm. of all, to find out what it looks like and feels like, but then go to a doctor and try to get diagnosed, because the treatment for everybody is very different.
What is EMDR?
It's funny. It's eye movement something, and but it doesn't have anything to do with the eye
Got
movement,
it.
Which is
okay.
very funny.
Right.
And what
is
what,
it a test?
No. There's a therapist here, Karen Kleinfelter, who specializes in that.
Okay.
And what's nice about that therapy is that you don't have to go and talk about how your mother was mean to you and this and that. You don't have to tell stories on your parents. You know, like
relive
you
some of your difficult life.
You're afraid of going to a psychiatrist
right.
or a psychotherapist because they might have to tell,
right.
you know.
And you're not supposed to tell.
Point, you know? But all of this is very confidential.
Sure.
But she said, well, we're not going to go through the horse accident. And I describe all this in Let Buster Lead. But we took the first trauma I could remember as a child and went through each trauma and tried to give it a different emotional outcome, try to reshape that memory so it had a different emotional result. Because with PTSD, what happens is the emotions don't think the event is over yet. So they still resonate through the body.
The trauma continues.
It does. When we put our finger near a candle, we flinch. It's the same reaction. It's not, oh, my finger's too close to that candle. I think I better remove it now before I'm burned. We don't go through that.
Right, right.
And post-traumatic stress disorder is that physiological, it's like emotional flinching. We can't control it. And it's not something that just goes away. People try to make themselves think it goes away by being tough and being guarded and being, you know, macho and, you know, drinking some more and working, right. You know, let's work ourselves to death, right. And try, oh, let's not, you know,
try everything
to,
but you know, confronting it.
Everything.
Yep.
And we don't need to live like that.
Sure.
For me, it was such a prison, such a trap to be afraid of what I might do or might say. I mean, I think we've all experienced that, where we're afraid of ourselves for a little while. And for me, that fear lasted for years. And I am here to tell you, it doesn't have to be that way. People can benefit from knowing what the symptoms are and going out and seeing if they need help and getting help.
So the healing comes through therapy, through seeking out specialists who understand how to treat post-traumatic stress disorder.
For me, it did, right. Yes. And from what I've been reading about it, yes. And it doesn't take very long.
Right.
You know, maybe a few months.
Right.
And there's lots of assistance out there. There's the Rape Crisis Center. Mm-hmm. That's giving assistance to, right. Rape victims. There's lots of assistance for veterans. But for the average kid, or the medical responders, mm-hmm. those are big. Mm-hmm. They get it. It's very high on the list for people who come down with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Let me ask you a question, because there is, of course, a lot of children who experience trauma here and parents not really understanding how to deal with or being willing to put them in some type of therapy to help them deal with it. How different do you think your life would have been had we understood what post-traumatic stress disorder is when you were younger and you experienced trauma in your life and you would have been able to have received the therapy? Do you think it would have been different? Would you certainly have been able to have confront issues with more knowledge, or really there would have been no difference?
Oh, I absolutely think so. I think, you know, when my parents divorced right after I was born, not too long after that, and going back and forth. And just, you know, my mother was away making pictures, and I'd be left with caretakers who she met maybe 2 days before she left. Wasn't her fault. She was just trying her best to make sure her kids were taken care of while she went and earned her living.
Right.
And, if somebody had been there for me emotionally, you bet.
Sure.
And said, are you okay? And do you need a hug? And yes, there's this really nice lady who has an office with lots of toys you can play with. And why don't we go and see her together?
Right.
But not a lot of families can afford that.
Right.
And there's a lot of help out there now for that sort of thing.
And I think that's important to understand, that there is help out there.
Yeah.
There is help. Even here in Santa Fe and throughout the North, there are places where you can go to get assistance for yourself or your children, to give them that leg up. Because I so much agree with you that, in today's environment, discussing mental health is not inappropriate. It's an appropriate discussion to have at the family table, because it affects so many families. And it's nothing that people should be ashamed of. They just understand it's who, in many ways, it's in our own fabric. It's who we are. It's how we are. And there are ways to be treated. But there are also many symptoms or many events that cause trauma out there. And, the sooner that people begin to embrace and be able to address it through some type of therapy, the better off they'll be, and the better off their families are certainly going to be.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there is no separating physical health from mental health.
Right. That's right.
It's all part of who. It's all part of us.
That's
it's all
a great
part
point.
Of who we are.
That's right.
And there's nothing wrong. One of the things that was funny when I was walking down, you know, through airports or in Walmart or Kmart with Buster, you know, I'd see people looking. You could just tell they were wondering, what's wrong with her? And I just got to accept it. It was
sure.
Like, so I look funny, so I'm different. Right. We're all different.
So how did you, with the last few minutes that we have left, tell us about Buster and how he participated in your healing.
Well, emotionally, he was there for me most of the time.
He was in who captured all the...
Physically, he buffered me from unexpected touch. He stayed alive for me until I knew I was well. I mean, this is a border collie who finally had a job at age 11 and a half. He stayed alive. Literally, Javier, I walked into Kmart right over here on St. Michael's one day, 2 days before Christmas. I had some little errand, you know, I had to buy, like, glue or something. It wasn't Christmas shopping. And I came out, I got in the car. Now, at that point, I was keeping Buster in the car because it was too painful for him to walk that
car. Oh, boy, right.
I was keeping him alive, and he was keeping me alive. It's just a wonderful relationship. I mean, before that, he would come and bat my arm, you know, and go to the door and wag his tail and look back at me as if to say, you need to get out.
Right.
You can't just sit home all day. You have to go somewhere, and I'm going with you.
Right.
But when he got so that he was ill and he couldn't walk. It was clear he was in pain walking.
Right.
I would still take him with me so he would have that job, just being in the car. I got back in the car after Kmart and I said to myself, wow, I got through that. I was fine. I can't believe it. I wasn't bothered at all.
Mm-hmm.
And just for a test, I went to another store, a big hardware store, Ace Hardware over there, and bought something. Again, 2 days before Christmas, and I was okay. A couple days later, I went to Michael's the day before Christmas.
Oh, boy.
Wow,
that's
you can
packed.
Imagine.
That's right.
And I, it was in Michael's. Of course, I had this memory one time when Buster was with me, when I first started taking him out with me. I remember getting upset and irritated with something. You know, this checker wasn't fast enough. You know how
right.
you get in line. Buster put his paws on top of me, on my shoulders, looked me in the eye, and said essentially, calm down. I'm here.
Right.
It's going to be okay. And these are the angels God sends us.
Amen.
God sends us
That's
angels
right.
with 4 feet,
uh-huh.
2 feet.
Amen.
Ideas as we go by. And
mm-hmm.
we need to realize that those are there to help us get mm-hmm. through whatever we are going to get through. That's what my title means. Let Buster lead. Let it be okay. It's
mm-hmm.
going to be all right. There is another side. And we're all going to be okay if we just follow mm-hmm. the gifts that are in our lives to lead us to good health.
And what happened with Buster?
Again, he waited until I knew I was well.
Mm-hmm.
He had cancer. Mm-hmm. That's why I started writing the book, actually, because it was the only way I could keep him alive. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I could do.
Right.
And he would lay down next to me while I write about him and sleep. And he died right before New Year's. Just a week, literally a week after I knew I was well. Mm. And he had the most beautiful death that one could ever imagine.
Mm.
I would like to have a death as beautiful as the death my darling Buster was able to have.
Mm.
I would really like to have one like that.
Well, he certainly will be living certainly in people's memories through this book. And as we close, I want to thank you for, you know, doing something that was very difficult to basically write what I can imagine may be difficult, to write the book, to relive the event, to open up to the world and let them come and experience your pain and also your healing. And the fact that you found some emotional comfort in a place where many people don't think to look, and those are through their own pets and through others around them who care and love them very much. And so thank you for sharing that. The book is Let Buster Lead. The author, Deborah Dozier Potter. Deborah Potter, along with her husband, Earl, great Santa fans who have given of not only their own time but their own financial resources to help this community, a better community, which we thank you for that. I don't know that you and Earl get thanked enough, and I certainly want to take that opportunity to do so. Let Buster Lead is about discovering love. It's about post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's about self-acceptance. It can be basically picked up this Christmas season at Garcia Bookstores, at any of the border stores.
There was Five and Dime.
Five and Dime, of course. Five and Dime right down in the plaza. And if you're having a difficult time getting out, Amazon.com is a place to go pick up the book. Deborah, to you and Earl, may you have a great Christmas season, a wonderful Happy New Year, and a great year to come. Thank you for sharing this wonderful story with us, and we certainly wish you the best as you go forward and share the story with many people.
Same to you and your whole family, Javier, and to those who are having a sad Christmas. It won't be sad next year, I hope.
I'm sure if they take the time to read the book and to learn how they can get help, it won't be. Coming up right after the top of the hour.